Paddy Power are now offering free streaming on all UK and Irish horse racing. No bet required. Just log in and watch.
Hello and welcome to this Monday racing postcast. I'm Maddie Pleil, as per usual, and I'm joined again by Robbie Wilders and Paul Binfield from Paddy Power. And today we're going to look back on a magnificent week of racing. It was a Royal Ascot like we haven't seen before in many more ways than one. And we're just going to take you through day one, day two, day three, etc., and pick out the highlights from some of the sparkling performances we saw this week before looking ahead to another classic, the Irish Derby, this weekend. So plenty to get stuck into. Hopefully the lads will be able to find us some future winners, and I'm sure we saw many a big race clue as well. Let's start off with day one, gents. I hope you're both sitting comfortably. Circus Maximus and Terrabellum battling it out in the Queen Anne seems such a long time ago now, but what a brilliant start to the meeting it was, Binners.
Yeah, absolutely. I think given the circumstances, Royal Ascot was brilliant last week. Unfortunate, no crowds there, obviously, but you couldn't have asked for better racing. And that, what a tremendous finish that was, with two of the greatest jockeys in the world, Ryan Moore and Frankie Dettori, fighting it out. Yeah, Circus Maximus prevailed. Possibly he's become the sort of iron horse of Aidan O'Brien's yard now, the Giants Causeway of the current generation. And we put the winner into the Sussex Stakes, Maddie. Circus Maximus is 9-2 behind just a couple of other horses, Siskin and Pinatubo.
Yeah, another one of this week's winners, Malatham. I think he could end up going somewhere like that. That'd be exciting, wouldn't it? Robbie, Circus Maximus, I mean, that's a great comparison that Binners has made to Giants Causeway, and maybe not as classy as him, but this horse has really, I mean, he's got a brilliant CV now. And Aidan O'Brien, he seemed to have, you know, ran him in the Derby last year, trying to figure out where he was going with this horse. And he's just brilliant and very strong at a mile.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. He's such a brave boy, isn't he, Circus Maximus? I personally thought he was going to be a bit vulnerable first time out, as a lot of Aidans are. But this year seems slightly different. He's having a lot of winners first out. As you say, yeah, he's starting to build a very impressive CV now. I think that's his third Group 1. Real top-class Ascot form. If we're looking for any sort of eye-catchers from that Queen Anne, though, I thought Mahatha was a little bit unlucky in seventh. He never got a clear run. He was absolutely punted off the boards in the morning before the race as well. I'd certainly want to keep him on side, because I think he probably would have got third with a clear run.
Yeah, I know Tom Siegel, he put him up as one to take out the race. It was a wide open race with lots of horses that had the potential to do better coming into it. And maybe we'll see some others come out of it and come on for the run, as you said. Let's move on to the Ribblesdale then. And Frankly Darling, I mean, wow, I was really impressed by her with this effort. She takes after her sire in a lot of ways, doesn't she? The way she just has that lovely, powerful stride. And I mean, she looks a rock solid Oaks candidate now, Binners. What price did you go after the Ribblesdale, and has there been much movement since?
Well, Maddie, yeah, she's now a 5-2 chance in the race, just behind Love It in the betting. David Milnes, your intrepid Newmarket correspondent, told me a couple of months ago that he thought Frankly Darling might be quite decent. This was a huge step up in class from her, from winning at Newcastle, and she did it really well. And John Gosden was a master at Royal Ascot last week of producing these horses in high class or top class races that didn't quite have the form at the highest level, and they all prevailed or went close. And Frankly Darling goes to Epsom with a massive chance.
Indeed. Robbie, I don't know what it was about her, but I was a little bit suspect of her beforehand. Obviously, she's a short price. She's bound to be with connections that she had. But there was just something about her demeanour and the way she was a little bit green and she was pricking her ears. But then she got the job done. I really, really like this filly now. I know you're a big Aidan O'Brien Ballydore fanboy, and you like Love and Peaceful as well. Obviously, we don't know how they're going to quite filter out through the season yet, but Frankly Darling, would you have her down as a real threat to Love?
Absolutely, yeah. I think she looks superb here. Much like yourself, I couldn't have had her on my mind as a betting proposition at that price, considering she'd come out of novice company at Newcastle. That was an impressive win, but this is a different league altogether. I'd agree that her and Love look somewhere ahead of the other middle distance fillies at this stage. Obviously, quite an obvious eye catcher, but I did think that Ennis Diamond ran on well for second. Took a massive leap forward from her maiden win the week before, and she looks another Group One filly in the making. But yeah, I'd certainly think that her, Frankly Dying and Love look quite a way ahead at the moment.
Yeah, she was an eye catcher, wasn't she? I'm not too sure, to be honest, if the rest of them in that race were any good. But as you say, big step forward from the second. Just before we move on to another horse who has classic credentials, I know that Andrew Scutts, one of the people that a brilliant news editor that we work with, said that, you know, why not go for the Derby with this filly? What do you make of those sort of ideas?
Yeah, it's an interesting hypothesis. We don't see it enough. I'm all for alternate campaigning, but I can't imagine with her connections that they'd want to dodge the Oaks. It's still a very prestigious race, and I mean, it's likely John Gosden's going to have something up his sleeve for the Derby.
Yeah, if he does, he's going to have to get it out of the way quite quickly. One horse who staked his Derby credentials was Pile Driver in the King Edward VII Stakes. He upset hot favourite Mogul, who was very disappointing. Arthur's Kingdom and Mohican Heights eventually filling the places. But Robbie, I've personally always been a fan of this horse, and it was great to see that the sort of smaller stable of William Muir and Martin Dwyer, obviously classic winning jockey, but he got back on a really likeable horse this.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he had some pretty smart form. He did look a bit big, too big a price looking back, but that's factored into the connections. I also thought that Arthur's Kingdom ran a nice race in second for Aidan O'Brien. I've actually gone in and backed him for the Irish Derby at 16-1 after this. I think he's going to come forward a hell of a lot. We had Mogul, obviously a bit disappointing fourth, but I know a lot of Aidan's been winning first time up, like I said, but you would still imagine there's plenty of improvement there. And for me, Arthur's Kingdom was the one to take out of the race for the Irish Derby, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in more detail.
Yeah, we certainly will a bit later on. Binners, I think a lot of people would perhaps look at this race and not see him necessarily as a sort of bona fide Derby candidate coming from the yard he comes from. And maybe especially if you look into his pedigree, it doesn't necessarily scream Derby winner, but it'll be great to see him there on the day, won't it?
It'll be absolutely brilliant, Maddie. Fair play to William Muir. Admittedly, the horse went off an outsider the other day, but William said a long time ago that this horse would win the Irish 2000 Guineas this year. And he's been right all along about him. I was at Haydock when he won last year. He looked quite impressive there. And it's great to see William and Martin Dwyer with a credible Derby candidate. We've got him in the market now at 16-1. And the market's headed by the 2000 Guineas Hero Kamiko with English King 130. Frankie rides that one now, I see from your newspaper website. Military March at 11-2. And David Milne said yesterday he'd been working well in Newmarket, and hopes were high of him under William Buick at Epsom.
Fantastic. Now we're on to one of the other Group 1s on day one. Already covered the Queen Anne, of course, but the King's Stand. It was finally Batash's opportunity to win at Royal Ascot, perhaps helped by the lack of crowds this year, but he did it. And he did it pretty easily in the end, as you'd expect. And hopefully, Robbie, we can see him get some more Group 1s this year.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, we've known for some years now that he's got a massive engine, and when he's at the top of his game, nothing can really stop him. As you alluded to, yeah, I think the behind closed doors element probably did help him. He never got worked up. He was very professional. Presumably the Numthorpe, where we'll probably potentially see him after Goodwood, will be behind closed doors as well. So that there's definitely the opportunity for him to get another Group 1 this season.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the smart juveniles we saw later on in the week, they could go to the Nunthorpe and maybe even a handicapper or two. Such was the impressive nature of their wins. Binners, any sort of reaction to Batash's win? I mean, it had been a long time coming, hadn't it, this win at Ascot?
Yeah, it had, Maddie. Both of you guys have talked about closed doors and everything. I'll tell you what, another thing that helped him was the lack of Blue Point being there, but having been touched off by that one by wafer thin margins the last couple of years. But it was clearly a going day for Batash. He was brilliant. Well done to Jim Crowley. He said the hardest thing was like He was so keen in the first couple of furlongs, measuring the fractions over the five, but he did a brilliant job. And we put him in at 11-10 for the non-fault. He's now a 4-6 favourite after that impressive performance, Maddie. But we might get on to the sceptical later. The horse getting beaten in the Diamond Jubilee saved the bookies. He's second in the market at 6-1. I personally would like to see him going the non-fault. He had the Diamond Jubilee won at the furlong pole, and then it's Art Power 9-1, 10-1 Golden Pal, who was second in one of the 2-year-old races, the Norfolk.
Yeah, there we are. So you mentioned that handicap at Art Power and Golden Pal, the juvenile. So that was Jim Crowley's second winner of 3 on day one. What a week he went on to have. It's quite unbelievable that Dettori ended up being top jockey. But let's move on to day two then. And the Hampton Court Stakes can be a good race for horses who have either ran in the Derby or vice versa. This year, obviously, the programming meant that it was a bit of a Derby trial. Russian Emperor, Aidan O'Brien, his Derby hand, we're not quite sure how strong it is at the moment. Do you think he'll end up going to the Derby, Robbie?
Well, you just never know with Aidan what way he's going to play it. The way he's campaigning horse at the moment, you'd be surprised if he went for both. But this was a good performance. He looked like he had absolutely no chance for a long way. You'd have written him off turning for home. I mean, he was hard fit, which obviously helped, but he did show a great stamina to reel in first receiver, who I also think is a very smart horse in the making. Where he goes next, I'm not sure, because it's tough to read Aidan O'Brien. But, I mean, this horse would have to be fairly close to the top of their pecking order now.
Yeah, I suppose he would. It does look quite open this year, which in a way has meant that all of this has made racing a much more compelling sort of product for a lot of people. Let's move on to the Prince of Wales Stakes, then, the highlight on day two. And Binners, this went to the very progressive Lord North, who won the Cambridgeshire last season, just won the race at Haydock as a prep for this, beating Mark Johnston's good horse. But Lord North here, I was really blown away by this. I mean, the eventual margin 3¾ lengths, I'm not sure I could have predicted it at the start of the season, but he looks a really credible opponent to enable in the Eclipse now.
Yeah, Maddie. And you know, Lord North was well supported on the day. We were 9-1 in the morning and he went off at 5-1. We got out of jail because we took on Japan in the same race and he disappointed. But I tell you what, I think Japan will be back. He was slowly away. And he's been beaten on his first start the last couple of seasons. So I look forward to seeing him next. But Lord North was brilliant, the former Cambridgeshire winner. And we've put him into the Coral Eclipse now. He's a 4-1 in that market behind two superb horses in Enable and Gayoff. And the way he won the other day, looks like he can throw up a challenge to them.
Yeah, exactly. 10 furlongs looks his ideal trip, doesn't he? And James Doyle's so good on that particular course. Robbie, would you have Lord North putting it up to the likes of Enable?
I don't want to dampen the celebrations, but no, I wouldn't particularly be afraid if I was Enable or Gaia. I think this race sort of, it can often favour a slightly speedier horse over 10 furlongs, and Lord North is just that. I mean, obviously people might have been disappointed at Japan finishing fourth, but I wasn't particularly. I think 10 furlongs is certainly a bit on the short side for him. And as I say, the race can often favour a speedier horse. He's a mile and a half horse. He's going to... He obviously badly needed his first run in the Dante last year. And, I still think Japan's a top-class horse. We'll see him up in trip again. Just want to touch on a Dave as well. He's starting to build quite an impressive CV now. He's now finished second in a Champion Stakes and a Prince of Wales. If there's a little bit more rain, who knows? He might well have not caught Lord North, but excellent race. Although the Coral Eclipse, I think Lord North will have to improve again to put it up to Enable or Gaia.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, we're going to touch a lot on Aidan O'Brien, and the fact that you lads were both keen to mention Japan is very interesting, because I feel like a lot of his horses obviously had a great week with Circus Maximus and other big winners, but some of them, they were, especially the juveniles, were quite disappointing, and you just think maybe he's building them towards the end of the season, as he traditionally likes to do. But a thrilling race, that Prince of Wales Stakes, and they were all in line, weren't they, about 2 furlongs from home. So it was thrilling to see them sprint to the finish with Lord North really, really putting the rest to shame in that department. Anyway, course on day two, we also had the Hunt Cup, the Windsor Castle and the Copper Horse Handicap. Any highlights from those three, Robbie?
It's always nice to see Her Majesty the Queen enjoy a winner at Royal Ascot. Obviously, she wasn't there to collect her trophy, but yeah, I thought this was a really smart performance from Tactical on the Windsor Castle. He looked a shade unlucky in the maiden won by Norfolk favourite Eye of Heaven on his first start. He showed a lot of precocity here, and I was quite pleased to see that.
Okay, let's move on to some of the key performances then on the Thursday. Now, this was an absolutely fantastic day, courtesy of Stradivarius. So let's start off with him. I mean, he's a funny horse because he's been dominating this division. £2 million bonuses, of course. This was his third Gold Cup, but he still seems to have, me included, perhaps his fair share of doubters from time to time. But this was explosive, and I don't think I've seen a staying performance like this for many, many years, Binners.
No, it was absolutely sensational. The performance of the week, absolutely brilliant. Great to see him do it again. Imperious, wasn't it? Frankie looking round. It was amazing. Hopefully, we might see him back for another Ascot Gold Cup next year. But in the meantime, I assume the Goodwood Cup will be next. And his owner was talking about the Ark, which is very exciting. Maybe the Coronation Cup was a little bit short for him, but if you got a bit heavier ground in Paris later in the year, you'd have to think Stradivarius would fry it up to the likes of a Noble and Logician. And he's a 16-1 poke now for the Ark, Stradivarius, behind 5-1 favourite Stable and Stable Companion Enable and Logician. So what a hand John Gosden has in the race. 12-1 Almond Eye, and it's 16 Stradivarius and Sotsars.
Yeah, incredible embarrassment of riches for John Gosden once again, isn't it? Robbie, would you be forerunning in a mark, as you said earlier, about that sort of competitive campaigning? I think it just adds so much when owners and trainers are a bit more brave with their positioning of horses. I'd love to see him in an arc.
Oh, me too, Maddie. Yeah, I jumped on the bow. I backed him at 33-1 for the arc after the race. I thought this was absolutely stunning. I've never backed him because he's always such a short price. But this was clearly a career best. I mean, on RPRs, it was £2 better than anything he's ever achieved. And we shouldn't forget that things weren't really ideal for Stradivarius here. He's come off a hard race in the Coronation Cup behind Gaeth, and the ground not being as quick as he probably likes probably made it even harder for him. But this is a massive career best. I thought Naif Road as well ran a massive race. I was quite sweet on him after he won the cigar at Newcastle. If you take out Strad, he's won a Gold Cup by 8 lengths from Cross Counter. He also looks a stayer going places. But yeah, as Bjorn Nielsen said, he's very much eyeing up the arc. And to be honest, I know the bigger price of the 33-1s, the 40-1s have gone, but I'd probably still argue that 16-1 represents value there.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with you if you knew he was going to go that way. I presume we'll see him next at Goodwood in that Goodwood Cup as he bids for another victory in that race. Now let's talk about some other performances on the day, because Malatham winning the Jersey and Calusi winning the Britannia, both for Roger Varin and Jim Crowley, were huge performances, I thought, and two horses who could really shake up the mile division along the road, Binners.
Yeah, Malatham, it was great to see him win. I wanted to back him, but he didn't. He wasn't proven enough on the ground for me, and connections afterwards, Roger Varian and Jim Crowley both said about the ground. But it was a tremendous performance. He may well go for the Sussex next, Maddie, and he's in there at 16-1. Although the Prix Jean Pratt was mooted as well, and reading between the lines, that seems more likely to me. But he's a credible contender for the Sussex if he turns up there. As for Calusi, yeah, a big gamble on that one, and hit the bookies quite hard that one, that race. But I'm not quite sure where he'll end up next. they were talking about a pattern race, but I have no idea which one it will be.
Yeah, I think all eyes will be on Colucci because everyone was so keen on Finest Sound. Of course, he was really well in and he absolutely beat him senseless, and Finest Sound beat the rest of them senseless, and they were very, very useful handicappers. For me, Robbie, this was one of the performances of the week from Colucci.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got to be a group horse, hasn't he? You probably do have to have close to £10 in hand to win one of these Royal Ascot handicaps. He's done that off 94 by 4.5 lengths. And we shouldn't forget as well, as his first run on turf. So it's going to be the last time we see him in handicaps for a while. Malathun as well, also Sheikh Hamdan's other horse. He was very impressive. That Doncaster form where he beat Wichita and Berlin Tango is looking phenomenal now. Just touch on the jersey as well. I thought Monarch of Egypt's been pretty unlucky in his last two races now. I put him up for the Irish 2000. He was a little bit unlucky there. He had nowhere to go. And the amount of ground he made up from the rear, 2 furlongs to the 1 furlong out, was pretty sensational. And I can't help but think if Ryan Moore rode the race a little bit differently, he might have actually won that jersey stakes. But I do think the Malathun, Monarch of Egypt and Colucci are very much Group 1 horses.
Talking of horses for the future, what about Battleground then? Out of Found, the ARC winner. She was a much-loved mare for Aidan O'Brien. Crazy to think that her progeny are already seeing the track. But this horse, he beat March Law in the Chesham Warfront, so perhaps has done quite well to win on soft ground, Robbie. He just looks one of those straightforward Aidan O'Brien horses that's going to improve and improve and improve.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first time we saw him was only a couple of weeks ago, so there must be a hell of a lot more to come. Obviously, Bar Warfront out of the brilliant mare Found, as you say. I mean, I've always been put off by Warfronts on soft ground, but the stats are actually starting to show otherwise. And maybe it's time that we all revise our way of thinking, because Warfront has had some pretty smart soft ground horses.
Yeah, maybe it is, maybe it is. Certainly some of the other juveniles that later on in the week we're going to talk about, Frey Nibron, I'm not sure what the excuses for them were, but maybe the ground might have impacted them as well. We'll soon talk about that. Now, it was a fantastic week for picking out horses of the future there. I mean, we've talked about Malathun, Colucci and their Battleground horses that I'm sure we're going to hear plenty more about. Stick with us, though, because we're going to take a quick break now before we talk about the rest of Royal Ascot and then look ahead to a fantastic weekend of action this weekend.
Paddy Power are giving money back as a free bet if your horse finishes second, third or fourth on one horse race every single day. Terms and conditions apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back then to this Monday postcast. I'm joined by Robbie Wilders and Paul Binfield, and we're looking back on Royal Ascot, the fabulous week that it was. So many standout performances, and the first on Friday was an absolutely knockout blow from Art Power. Again, another handicapper going places and connections. I think they mentioned the Nunthorpe maybe next. Binners, I mean, he was just flawless, wasn't he? He was always in the right place. He's got brazen speed and he saw it out really well. Perhaps he has options over further in the future as well.
Yeah, it was an exceptional performance, Maddie. Tim Easterby has described him before the race as a proper horse, and he certainly is. Well done to the King Power Racing manager, Alistair Donald, for picking the handicap, because he was very well in looking at that, and he must go to the Nunthorpe with a massive chance. Admittedly, he's got the likes of Potassium Skeptical ahead of him in the market, but you know, on that performance, he must go there with a credible chance. I've already said earlier in the podcast, we made Potash 4-6 favourite for the race, Skeptical 6-1. But Art Power is it third in at 9-1, and no doubt Tim Easterby would love to win the Nunthorpe at his local track at York.
Indeed. Now, Robbie, honestly, I think this horse could be a real threat to the top horses over 5 furlongs. Do you agree with that, or am I getting carried away?
I mean, yeah, it was a huge performance, and winning that the mark of 97 was clearly a gift looking back. Of course, I'd like to see him in the Nunthorpe, but my big concern there is that 3-year-olds aren't really favourably weighted compared to the older horse in the race. He'd only get £2 from Batash. That's not a massive amount of weight for Batash to concede, whereas 2-year-olds would receive £24.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
A lot. If you take a if you take a shot, Wesley Ward, two-year-old, like Golden Powell, who was second in the Nunthorpe, and apparently he's going second in the Norfolk, sorry, he's going to the Nunthorpe next. I mean, that could very much swing things in his favour. I want to see more two-year-olds running in this race because the numbers just favour them. We've not seen it since 2016 when Yalta and Prince of Lear both ran in it. But that £24, I mean, I just like to see it more often. And it's exciting that we're going to see the Norfolk second, Golden Powell run there for Wesley Ward next.
Let's talk about him then, because a lot of people were saying, Andrew Daly, that was one of the best losing rides they saw all week in the Norfolk when Golden Power was second to the Learjet. And just the way he tried to conserve his stamina, a lot of these Wesley Ward horses are very, very naturally pacey. And then in the sort of final half of furlong, they empty out. And this horse, I mean, it was only just touched off by a neck. Would he be the one you'd want to be on in the Nunthorpe, Robbie? Because as you say, it's a hell of a lot of weight.
Oh, it's massive, yeah. He's a very mature horse. I backed him at 14-1 for it after the race when I heard that he was going to go. Just the numbers just really favour two-year-olds. And he's a mature horse. And if the ground didn't have a bit of juice in it, I mean, who knows? He probably would have won a bit of faster ground. And it's probably likely to be faster in York. So, yeah, I think he must go close with that much weight.
Indeed. Let's talk about another explosive juvenile then in Dandala, the Albany winner. Pretty well back this, 13-2, she eventually returned at, beating Satahi, who was my fancy in the race. I was really keen on Roger Varian's filly. I was delighted when the money came. And then, obviously, she just couldn't make it happen. Maybe she's a slightly quirky and a little bit green still, but no chance of beating Dandala whatsoever. Six lengths was the eventual margin. And races like the Pre-Morny are going to be on her agenda now. I mean, interesting that Carl Burke was comparing her to Lawrence, Robbie. What do you make of that?
Yeah, fascinating. High praise indeed. I mean, it's early enough to know. We only saw her for the first time a few weeks ago, but she just won an Albany by six lengths. I mean, you have to be a very, very smart filly to do that. And so many winners have actually came from that opening week at Newcastle, haven't they? In Palace Pier, Art Powers, we touched upon. Sabuska, Dark Vision. I mean, that's turned out to be an outstanding week of racing at Newcastle. But yes, Satahi was very eye-catching second as well. Much like Monarch of Egypt, she looked like she was never going to get involved from the rear, but she's absolutely rattled home and flashing her tail. She's made up a load of ground. So, I mean, I wouldn't give up on her, certainly.
I think they all shaped like they were really good quality fillies in a lot of these juvenile races. And Satahi and Mother Earth, I'd still say they ran to a very good level. Bit of a romance story this again, because she just cost only €22,000 as a yearling. We'll talk about another one of those sort of romance stories with the 250-1 Coventry winner Nando Parado a little bit later on. But Binner's Dandala, I mean, by Dandy Man, and Carl Burke's comparing her to Lawrence. Do you think something like the Guineas will be a fit for her down the line?
Yeah, definitely, Maddie. Yeah, we've got her in a 16-1 favourite for next year's 1,000 guineas. A horse you just mentioned, Mother Earth, 20, and then other horses like More Beautiful behind it. The Pre-Morny is shaping up, you mentioned as well, shaping up like a real nice two-year-old race over there in France. Campanelle and the Learjet, we can't separate those two at 9-4. And then Dandala at 3-1. So But Dandala must go there with a serious chance if she's anywhere near as good as Lawrence, or even better.
Yeah, who knows? It's always a brilliant race, that Pre-Morny, isn't it? You often get the best juveniles, the colts, the fillies, taking each other on. Let's talk about the Hardwick now, and another filly, or mare rather, who's clearly took a step up, or has she? Fanny Logan winning under Frankie Dettori, John Gosden again beating a Lunac at 40-1, and last year's winner Defoe in third. Robbie, I must admit, I find the Hardwick a bit of a funny race these days. It's a Group 2, yet it's over a mile and a half. It's almost like a mini King George. But I thought this was quite disappointing, in truth, that she managed to win. I'm just not sure this division's very strong.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree. I mean, if you're a Group 1 horse, who's probably best over a mile and a half. I mean, like Japan, you're probably going to prefer to go to the Prince of Wales's because it is a Group of One. It's a bit of an in-between race, as you say. I think much like Lord North and the Prince of Wales, the speedier horse has very much come to the fore here. I suppose you could argue I think looking back, she's probably a bigger price than she's entitled to be because her form on the back end of last season was pretty smart. I thought the big eye catcher in the race was Hamish in fourth.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
I mean, yeah, he was a really progressive handicapper last year. Last two furlongs out, kept on really well to take fourth. I think he clearly needs a bit of a trip. You could say the E-ball would be the ideal race for him now, but I'd be a little bit concerned that he'd have quite a big weight in that. Out and out, 1 mile six horse, and I'd like to see him in something like the Irish St. Ledger later in the season. I think that could be a potentially winnable Group One for Hamish.
Okay, Binners, what did you take away from the Hardwick?
Well, Fanny Logan, I think she did it very well, and no excuses for any of the others, really. She's been knocking on the door in the highest company. It was a nice fourth in the Breeders' Cup behind Iridessa. And it'll be interesting to see where Mr. Gosden goes now. He was talking about a Group 1 race for fillies or maybe taking on the colts as well. He did mention the Lancashire Oaks as well. She has an entry in the Pretty Polly Stakes at the Curra next week over a couple of furlongs less. Whether she'll be able to take that up so quickly, I don't know. But an intriguing horse for the future, Maddie.
Indeed, she's one of those where John Gosden can sort of pick and choose his options, can't he? One horse who is definitely going to have a very bright future is Golden Horde. And Clive Cox and Adam Kirby, once again, unearthing just an absolutely bomb-proof sprinter. They've had Lethal Force, this horse's sire, they've had Harry Angel, and this horse stays in the same stable as those two. So he was clearly held in very high regard. And to win in this style on his seasonal reappearance from Kimari and Ventura Rebel, I thought this was quite a deep race, Robbie. And he just made it look really easy.
Yeah, I think this Commonwealth Cup is turned into one of the races of the meeting every year. And I thought this looked an excellent race. He had that top-class juvenile form in the book behind Earthlight in the middle park. On this evidence, he's clearly trained on as another career best. Very authoritative at the finish in a race which looked pretty deep. And as you say, there's no better man than Clive Cox to train a good sprinter. Kamari in second, a little bit unlucky now not to have won Royal Ascot second in the Queen Mary behind, their name escapes me at the
Raffle
moment.
Prize.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. and again, with these water sprinters, a bit of faster ground and probably Kamari would have run Golden Horde much closer. But yeah, brilliant race. And yeah, out and out Group 1 horses.
Indeed, and plenty of promise to be taken from those in behind. Millisle, she ran much better. She definitely looked a sprinter. And, I put up Royal Crusade as a horse to take out of the meeting. I really like this horse, and I think he'll come on plenty for the run. And he's like one of those you mentioned. I think better ground would help him as well. Let's move on to the final day then. We've sort of discussed a lot of the juveniles already, but Campanelli, the Queen Mary winner, beating Sacred and Caroline Dale at 100-1. This was a performance slightly different to what we're used to seeing from Wesley Ward horses, in that she didn't make all and she conserved her energy and her performance was managed beautifully by Dottori to come along that far side, Binners. How do you rate Campanelli among the juvenile winners we saw last week?
Very highly, Maddie. I've already said she's joint favourite with the Learjet for the pre-morning, a race that Wesley Ward won with Lady Aurelia a few years ago. So, if she's anywhere near as good as her, she is going to be good. Wesley Ward's two-year-olds ran well. I agree with Robbie about Golden Power. That was an exceptional effort on the wrong ground. Wesley actually thought that was his best chance of the week. He'd been working really well in Newmarket under Kieran and Fallon. But Campanelle must be up there as well. And she goes to the pre-morning with a massive chance. And knowing Wesley, we'll see her back next year at Royal Ascot in the Commonwealth Cup. And I can't wait for that either.
Yeah, his horses, they bring such a brilliant dimension to Royal Ascot, don't they? I must admit, I had a very strong case of seconditis on Saturday, and I loved Sacred. And when she came there travelling on the bridle, I thought, here we go, I'm going to collect. But she just looked a little bit green again and perhaps could have done with some company in the closing stages. Robbie, your analysis of that race?
Yeah, I think you both covered it pretty well. William Haggis' horses just kept knocking on the door, didn't they? Just finishing second and third. He was quite unlucky not to get on the board. But yeah, excellent to see Wes Ward get the rewards he deserves, and Campanelle, very professional filly, and yeah, I'd love to see her, see how she gets on in France later in the year.
Now, we're talking of a history maker now, because Nando Parado, I believe I said he was 250-1 earlier on in the show. Apologies for that, 150-1. Although I think you probably could have backed him at 250-1 earlier on in the day. He won the Coventry from Carder, another one I backed. So that's definitely me with a case of seconditis, and Sequia in third at 25-1. Now, this was an incredible performance, given that he was well beaten on debut at Newmarket. He's reversed that form around and won this quite snugly in the end. Do you think he was just sort of a flash in the pan, or can you see him going on from this, Rob?
Well, yeah, I don't normally get excited by massive prize winners if I haven't backed them, but considering this is a piece of Royal Ascot history, I mean, that is quite thrilling. There didn't really seem to be any fluke about it either. He's kept on dowly, told off Cato, who's absolutely punted off the boards. Cato did look a little bit awkward in the finish to me, if I'm picking holes. Will Nando Parado be able to uphold the form if they met again? I don't know. But, I mean, brilliant out result for Clive Cox again. And for sure, he won't be going on for anywhere near that sort of price when he lines up next.
Indeed. And funny horse in this race, Painless Potter in fifth for Alan King, and that was his worst result of the week. Of course, he had the winners. He also had Tritonic running well, and a sensational result for him that week. But let's move on to some of the Group 1s then, the first of which was the Coronation Stakes, and Alpine Star. Funny performance this, really, because she's a half-sister, of course, to Alpha Centauri, but she certainly doesn't look it. She's quite a plain small filly, but she was off the bridle turning from home, but she blew them away, sharing in second for Graham Motion. And Quadrilateral, the 1,000 guineas runner-up, she just didn't really fire, as a lot of people would have hoped, the 2-1 favourite. But Binners, I mean, Jessica Harrington, we talk about her all the time on these shows, and she's just exceptional producing a horse, and this filly was the only one that hadn't had a run.
That's right, and you're right about Jessica Harrington. Well done to Robbie. I sent him an email the other day saying, did you go in again? Because he backed her for the Irish 1,000 guineas, and I said she's going to Royal Ascot for the coronation, and he's told me he did. So well done to him. He pinpointed her a couple of weeks ago. It was an exceptional performance. Another winner in the colour, in the Niarchos colours, carried by Alpha Centauri for Jessica, and she goes to Epsom with a fair chance if she gets a mile and a half. Frankie saying that she probably wants 10 furlongs is perfect for her, but I'm not sure if that's Frankie not wanting her to take on Frankly Darling at Epsom. She's 10-1 for the Oaks now, and she must go there with a serious chance.
Yeah, it's all love on these podcasts, isn't it? We're all cheering on Robbie. Well done, Rob. Now let's get into dissecting this form, because I must admit, I know Paul Keighley said afterwards he just doesn't think that 1,000 guineas form is very strong. And I mean, looking at this, I'd have to agree. I think Quadrilateral, she promised a lot last year, but she's a very big filly, and maybe they just pushed her a little bit too soon with that Filly's Mile win. And then Cloak of Spirits, I mean, she was a big drifter on the day, and then she ran like it as well. I mean, obviously Love was the standout performer from that, Robbie, but do you agree, or do you think I'm being a bit harsh? Should we give the 1,000 guineas fillies another chance?
Yeah, cheers for that email, Binners, first of all. I think this is the best mile filly around. I mean, yeah, you could argue that the 1,000 guineas form isn't up to as much as maybe we might have thought, but she still thrashed a really smart US filly there. So first run of the season, it was an Alpha Centauri-esque performance, even though she's obviously a different stature, a different build. But yeah, this was excellent. I imagine there'll be a lot of improvements to come. She clearly has it in her to step up to 10 furlongs. I don't know where they're going to go next. Maybe there might be a soft option to look at the Pretty Polly Stakes over 10 at the Curragh. But I mean, yeah, this is a brilliant filly, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I just thought that she sort of made that Guinness form look a little bit pale. I don't know. But I can see they're campaigning her in sort of fillies only races and mopping up some of those Group 1s. But who knows? Hopefully we'll see her face the either the older mares or the colts a bit later on in the season. Let's move on to a big talking point of the week then, the St. James's Palace, which was won by Palace Pier, one of the finishes of the week with the Pinatubo and Wichita in there. But let's address something that has been spoken about, and that's the use of sort of team tactics by Ballydoyle in this race. Wichita obviously went out in front, and they also had Arizona and Royal Dornock, and they did make it very messy for Pinatubo. You know, lots of people saying that they think that there's no place for that in racing. Robbie, I mean, what do you make of it?
No, I disagree. I think you've just got to try and find these margins to create any sort of advantage you can. As long as there's not actually foul play, you're more than entitled to hold your position and hamper other horses if you can get away with it, I think. But this was an unbelievable race. Palace Pier, I think his stamina over Ascot's stiff miles probably won things on the day. Yes. He's obviously stepped up from Handicap Humpney. Brilliant performance. He's open to plenty of improvement, but I kind of think if he met Pinatubo at Goodwood in the Sussex Stakes, I'd probably side with Pinatubo on a more speed-favouring track. Throw Siskin into the mix, though, and that is an absolutely outstanding group one to look forward to.
Certainly is, and Wichita just ahead behind Pinatubo in the end. His sort of fitness coming into play there when he was rallying. Again, I back Wichita, and I thought he would, you know, had a brilliant sit. He dictated a sort of steady pace, but Palace Pier's acceleration, as you say, stamina really won out. Binners, I mean, they're talking of going to the Sussex Stakes, as we've already mentioned, but Pinatubo, what would you do with him now? Because a lot of our tipsters are saying, oh, they think he needs further. I mean, I couldn't agree with that. I think, if anything, he wants an easy mile or a 7 furlongs either.
Yeah, I thought I know Pinatubo was crabbed on Saturday, Maddie, but I thought he ran an excellent race. Palace Pier was, I think, John Gosden's number one hope for the 2,000 guineas. They went to a handicap at Newcastle instead off a lovely mark just to give him a nice piece of work. And I wasn't surprised at all that Palace Pier won. I think Pinatubo will win top class races this year, possibly the Sussex. And clearly John Gosden's been listening to Robbie and had a little chat with him, and it looks like they're going for the Jacques Lemaire with Palace Pier, who we did initially put in for 2-1 for the Sussex Stakes, but we've taken him out of the market now. Fascinating race of Sussex, can't wait for that. 7-4 Siskin, 3-1 Pinatubo, and 9-2 Circus Maximus.
Yeah, I must admit, this race for me, a lot of it revolved around the training of horses and their sort of approach. And John Gosden, you know, he didn't rush Palace Pier last year. He was really impressive on his two starts at Sandown. And then, as you say, been as just that quiet run at Newcastle, and then bang, straight in at the big time without overfacing him too early or running him too much as a two-year-old. To me, it was a win that rewarded his patience and the way he campaigned him. Now, another win which rewarded a rider's patience anyway came in the Diamond Jubilee with Kevin Stott riding Hello Yumzane. He'd ridden the horse a lot in his earlier rides and then was jocked off when he won the Sprint Cup at Haydock last season under James Doyle. But Kevin Stott, I mean, he had his first Royal Ascot winner and then he rode his second one on Hey Jonesy. But this was a big, big performance from Hello Yumzane, and perhaps he won it at the start, Robbie. What do you think?
Yeah, he did show a lot of early boot, didn't he? But he did have to tough out as well. Really smart performance doing this first time up, I think, because you probably don't really associate Kevin Ryan with winners first time. Hello Yumzane seems to go on any ground, anything from good to soft. I don't think I want to take a short price about him in the July Cup, though. I mean, he might well win it. We know he's got the ability to, but these sprints do tend to throw up volatile results, and he's never run at Newmarket.
Okay, so a note of caution there. Would you have a preference for who you'd be on in that July Cup?
I've not studied the market in great detail, but with sprints, I never like to side with jollies, really, because you could almost run the races 20 times and get 20 very different outcomes. There's so many factors to consider. You need a lot of luck in running. You need the splits to open. I did want Skeptical to win the race for the story, because obviously, as it's been well documented, that he was a cheap buy, cast off from Godolphin. But he's definitely proved that he's right up there with the top British sprinters. I think his stamina's probably just run out over six furlongs, and maybe a slightly sharper track or down in trip can see him hit the Group 1 top table.
Yeah, indeed. He looks like a horse who, as you say, just needs a little bit shorter. Five furlongs probably would have been his bag. But then, of course, as the connections were aware of, they would have run into Batash if they ran in the King's Stand. Dream of Dreams gives this form a strong look. He was obviously a narrow second in the race last year to Blue Point. But, Binners, how do you sum up the race? We had the horses like the One Master and the Tin Man in behind, Sanzamali, former Royal Ascot winner as well. And Hello Yumzane, I mean, he really toughed it out, didn't he?
He did. I'll tell you how I'll sum it up, Maddie. It was looking a disastrous day for the bookies, with Frankie having already won three races. If he'd gone in again on Skeptical, it was going to be a disastrous day. Somebody who tipped up Nando Parado earlier on and put up a tweet, "I love Clive Coxwell." The bookies were putting up, we love Kevin Stott. It really saved us this result. For the July Cup, we make Hello Yumzane 6-1 behind Golden Horde, so we think the younger generation might be slightly better. Skeptical's in there at 6-1 as well. I've already said I'd like to see Skeptical over five furlongs next, possibly in the Nunthorpe, but there's time between the races, so Dennis could take in the July Cup first. And Dream of Dreams is interesting. Not the greatest Royal Ascot for Sir Michael Stout. You expect him to have a winner there. But Dream of Dreams ran an absolute cracker and got done a fag paper in the Diamond Jubilee. So he could be interesting in the July Cup at 12-1.
Indeed. Let's also mention that the sort of racing's power couple, Tom Marcon and Holly Doyle, both got their first Royal Ascot winners on Who Dares Wins on Scarlet Dragon. They were brilliant to see, both for Henry Ponsonbury and Alan King. Any other highlights, gents, before we take a quick break and look ahead to the action? Because it really was a week chock full of performances, whether that be training performances, whether it be jockeys getting their first ride, or even just horses, you know, who may not have won but have put up really good performances. What did you think, Ben? Is anything in particular was a highlight for you?
Yeah, I think my highlight would be the Alan King and the way he had three winners, a close second in the colours of my friend Max McNeil. The horse ran really well, but Alan King has showed that he can mix it with the top flat trainers at the greatest meeting in the world. And from a personal point of view, during the lockdown, I was writing a few articles for our website, and I had to write a piece about five flat trainers to look out for, and I'm delighted that I put Alan King in the list. I think he is underrated, and he's proved it. How on earth could Alan King go and saddle three winners and a second? And well done to him. It was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Superb. Hear, hear. And well done putting him in that piece. Robbie, a highlight from the week from you?
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant to see these top riders get their first Royal Ascot winner. But what always excites me most in racing is the horse's performance. And Stradivarius absolutely won the show there. A stunning Gold Cup performance. And yeah, I hope he turns up to the Arc. And I think he'll take a bit of beating if he's in that sort of form.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a tough couple of months and still is for a lot of people. But I think Royal Ascot, the performance is on track, and it was just a brilliant, brilliant week by everyone involved. And give us all some much needed sort of enjoyment of sport again, which is absolutely fabulous. More of which we'll see this weekend. So don't go anywhere.
Paddy Power Games has over 250 of your favourites to play online, and we're going to attempt to name them all in this 10-second ad before the T's and C's kick in. There's Blackjack, 18+, bgambleaware.org.
So there's another classic to look ahead to this weekend with the Dubai Duty Free Irish Derby, and a really interesting market this. Obviously, we don't know the final fields just yet, but we have Vatican City, I believe, leading a lot of the betting. Binners, second last time out, that was a really good performance from an unexposed horse coming forward.
Yeah, Vatican City does head the market, Maddie, at 11-4, came over to Newmarket last year for a sighter as a two-year-old, got beaten, but has proved what he can do this year. Second in the market, Inish Free, again Edinburgh, Aidan O'Brien at 9-2. His Royal Ascot winner, Russian Emperor at 5. Mogul 6, needs to come back, but could well do. Arthur's Kingdom at 7, who Robbie's backed at 16-1, so he's laughing at the price. 10-1 Cormorant, Crossfire Hurricane, Fiscal Rules, and it's 14-1 Bar.
Yeah, Aidan O'Brien with the top 6 as I'm looking at this card in the market. And Joseph trains the next one in. So it really is domination of their family. Richard Hughes, interesting that he's got Brentford Hope in there. Very impressive on debut at Newmarket. So it would be good to see something shake up these O'Briens, wouldn't it? Well, probably not if you're Robbie Wilders anyway. Because you probably... Who are you on in this, Robbie?
Back to Arthur's Kingdom at 16s. I thought that the anti-post market had a lovely shape to it because... Vatican City at the top and in his free. I don't think Vatican City will run. He's a brother to Glenn Eagles, who is an out-and-out miler. I don't think they're just going to chuck him 4 furlongs up in trip. He's far from guaranteed to stay. And in his free, now he was a very good two-year-old, but is he going to be good enough to win an Irish Derby first time up? I'd be quite surprised. I just thought Arthur's Kingdom, his price did have a bit of juice at double figures, and it probably still does, to be honest, because he's a bigger price than Mogul. He was ahead of him there, and he's open to just as much improvement, having both raced 5 times. So yeah, I'd have to side with him, but I mean, jockey bookings are going to sort of dictate how the market settles itself, but yeah, I'll stick with Arthur's Kingdom.
Okay, bit of value there perhaps. I'm just looking down, and obviously, I don't think he's going to run, but Santiago, who won the Queen's Vase, for me, I thought he looked like he could be a Derby horse. Aidan O'Brien, if he's struggling for one, but maybe they won't go that way with him yet. Maybe they'll bring him on a bit slower. Ben, is there anything else to add on some of the other contenders or some of the form we've seen? Would you share Robbie's view about Innisfree? I mean, that would be a big ask, wouldn't it?
No, I disagree with Robbie completely on this one. I think Innisfree has got the form in the book to win this first time out. And Aidan's horses, you know, he can certainly get one fit enough. My only worry about him is I probably wouldn't like to be backing him until I see the final fields. The latest I've seen about him was in a Racing Post stable visit from Aidan, and he suffered a small setback, and Aidan was trying to get him back for either the English Derby or the Irish Derby. So I'd like to see that Innisfree was actually running, but obviously the form to Kamiko in the Vertim Futurity Trophy behind him has been franked by Kamiko's brilliant win in the English 2000 Guineas. And Innisfree is always shaped like a horse that will do much better over further.
Yeah, you mentioned that key form line there. Another key form line will be from the Irish 2000 Guineas, won by Siskin. Obviously, Vatican City, we're not sure if he's going to run, was in second. Armory was in fourth. He could run. Sinowan again, and a whole host of others in behind. But what do you think of the horses coming out of that race, Robbie? Because Lope Fernandez and Monarch of Egypt, I mean, Lope Fernandez probably a bit disappointing, but maybe had his excuses. But Monarch of Egypt certainly did the form a favour when he was second in the Jersey.
He certainly did, yeah. As I touched upon earlier, I think he, under a different ride, he probably could have won. And in the Irish 2000, if you watch that back, he was really unlucky. They were all just absolutely stacked up. There was nowhere to go. He didn't have a hard race at all. We'll need more evidence, but I think the early signs are that the Irish 2000 could be quite a good race.
Yeah. Well, it will certainly be a race to look forward to this weekend. Sovereign, obviously a shock winner last year, but before that we had La Trobe, Capri, Harzan, Jack Hobbs, Australia, Camelot. Great winners of the race. So hopefully it can throw up another fab result this time around. Any other horses that you're interested in this week, gents? Where have you been looking at? I'll go to you first, Robbie.
Just one in the Vintage Crop Stakes. Nickerjack Cave, I was really impressed by his seasonal return. He beat a horse I really like, Falconator, I've talked about for ages, and Twilight Payment, who's a real stand addition in these staying group races. Jay Lyons, trained 4-year-old, showed great engine there. I'll be interested to see how far he goes, and he can probably uphold form of those two because he's open to a little bit more improvement as a 4-year-old.
Excellent, thanks very much. And you, Binners, what have you been looking at?
Well, I haven't seen the entries yet for the Northumberland Plate or the Constellation Race, Maddie, but I'm hoping that Sir Michael Stout's Alignac is in there. Your man David Milnes reported that he was working very well on the Lime Kilns Long Gallop in Newmarket on Saturday. And I was really impressed with the way he stayed on over an extended mile and a half at Newcastle on his seasonal debut, winning that day on the first day of June. He certainly wasn't stopping there. And I think whichever race he runs in of those two, he could give Sir Michael a little bit of compensation for Royal Ascot.
Okay, before we leave you, let's hope we can pick out some winners then. Two good angles from you two so far, but a nap, please, for the week ahead. Robbie, I'll go with you.
I was going to put up Arthur's Kingdom, but that 16s is long gone. I think he's a much fairer price now. So I'm going to stick with another anti-post bet, Golden Pal in the number four, but I believe he's still a double-figure price. Just love the angle of two-year-olds getting £24 from the older horses. If you find a top class one who's really at the top of his game, then that could definitely swing things in their favour. So Golden Pal in the number four, shop around, see there might be some 14 still available.
I love that. Fantastic. It's great that Wesley Ward has got the sort of the will to do it, hasn't he? He's not afraid to run these horses in different kinds of races and really give them a tough European campaign. Binner's pick from you.
Yeah, I think Robbie's cracked it on the head there. I think that Golden Power is exceptional, and I look forward to seeing him in the number four, but I think he is a big price. I'm going to stick with my Lignac, Maddie. I'm looking forward to seeing him over a longer trip at Newcastle, and I think he could really be a decent horse who possibly turns into a cup horse next year.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? When you look at that Northumberland Plate last year, Who Dares Wins, what he's done since then. Won a Royal Ascot winner. He's won over fences, over hurdles, any ground. What a brilliant horse. And on that note, what a wonderful morning this has been, chatting over at Royal Ascot. Thanks for joining us. Bruce will be back on Friday to have a look at the detailed weekend's action with the team. So make sure to tune in for that. In the meantime, have a wonderful week.